Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to Ancast. My guest this week, returning champions, and I guess we're reforming the League of Extraordinary Super Nerds here. It's Justin Savakis. Hey, Justin.
Howdy.
Mike Toole.
Getting the band back together.
There you go. And Otaku USA and Anime World Orders, Daryl Surratt. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, what's going on? Nerds assemble.
Indeed. Oh, yeah. So it's been a while since we had one of these shows, and I kind of want to start out with a sort of, just, you know what you guys have been watching. What are you into lately? What have you seen? What's on your radar? Mike, let's start with you.
Well, I've been playing major catch up on Tiger and Bunny. I just watched episode 12, and I'm hoping to get all caught up with episode 21 and 22 by the end of this week. That's a heck of a show.
It is.
Yeah, it's I was not convinced by the first couple of episodes. I thought it looked great, but it didn't seem like there was much under the hood. But it's very fun, very entertaining stuff.
Yeah, it strikes me as this is in the past couple of months, a lot of stuff that I've seen, well, not a lot, two things, have been like, oh, this is what I was hoping they were going to make.
Right. Yeah, seriously. So I've really been enjoying that. I actually went back and dug out my Last Exile DVDs because I've owned that show for years, but I never really watched it. I saw the first two episodes at an anime club meeting. Yeah, that's another thing. I actually found a functional anime club for grown-ups. So that's
Whoa.
Pretty exciting.
Well, yeah. Let's hear about that in a little bit, but go ahead and talk about Last Exile.
So I started watching Last Exile because I've owned it for years, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I like the designs, and I'm enjoying the story so far. They just introduced a character who's such an obvious ripoff of Captain Harlock. It's pretty amusing.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm enjoying that. Hopefully I'll get something out of the sequel, even though isn't the sequel about, like, the 10-year-old girls or something like that?
Based on Bamboo's description, it's like Sky Pirate stuff.
Interesting,
but not Alex Rowe.
No, right.
It's so you don't have the cool Harlock character. Yeah, it figures.
I'm hoping for a Don Carnage cameo.
Don Carnage, exactly.
That show put me right to sleep. Last Exile.
Yeah, and the third
beautiful
and final
world.
Thing.
I just don't like the actual story that they decide to put in that world.
Yeah.
Well, I like the idea of this. You know, these airships with these weird rigid rules of combat that involve like musketeers. That was kind of neat. And the third and final thing I've been really jazzed up on is a show called Briger from 1981.
The same guy who did Dugrum and a lot of those older robot shows. It's another one-man labor of love, you know, translating, you know, this, you know, crazy, you know, super laid-back robot show.
Yeah, Briger was mentioned at one point in the Hayate the Combat Butler manga by one character who insists up and down that it has the most epic opening of any anime ever. I would agree with that. And it has this swagger to it. It's really fun and goofy and entertaining to watch.
I remember when Monkey Punch had come to a convention and the ANN Encyclopedia had, you know, inaccurately credited him as being the character designer for Briger because the art style is so reminiscent of him. I asked him about it, and he just looked at me like I was insane because, you know, who would have guessed that the user-contributed, you know, encyclopedia resource, you know, may not have been accurate. But, you know, it's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought at all, because if you talk to the artists who worked on it, the producers wanted the characters in Briger to look like Lupin characters, and they do.
Very creative.
Yeah.
It was huge at the time, right?
I wouldn't say
not so much.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they made three shows based on this unified vague theme called J9, where the second one was called Baxinger and the third one is called Satsu Reiger. I don't get the impression they don't have the same level of nostalgia as like the old Go Nagai robot shows or something like Macross, but they have their audience, and I'm enjoying it. It's fun.
Well, I mean, in terms of the Lupin ripoff, was early 80s wasn't his heyday? I mean, it was 70s was his heyday, I guess.
The 70s was the heyday of Lupin the Third, particularly the late 70s when they had the second series of it. Come the 1980s, I mean, when I think of I guess the third series of Lupin hadn't come out by the time Briger was airing. That wouldn't have been till the mid-80s.
Yeah, that's correct. I think Lupin the Third Part 3 was 85.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Justin, what have you been checking out?
Well, I've just kind of been droning myself in new Blu-rays. So just this week, I got the new Blu-ray of 12 Kingdoms, the first part.
Mm.
And nice. Followed by the new Blu-ray of the second Eden of the East movie, followed by mere minutes, by Rurouni Kenshin, the OVAs.
Yeah, that just
wow, you actually bought
good.
That?
I actually bought it, and I don't regret it for a second. Holy
I
shit.
I was on that Kenshin set because, you know, I love that first OAV, and the movie is all right, and the second OAV is upsetting to me. Beautiful looking, though.
I only bought that one OVA.
I thought you had to get it all in one set.
No. I only bought the one that I like. I don't even like Kenshin TV.
So is the first two OVAs, Trust and Betrayal, is that on one BD?
BD that was $64 or whatever. Yeah. And totally worth it. It looks gorgeous. Like, this is a reference quality Blu-ray, as far as I'm concerned. Wow. Still,
Kingdoms done in high def, Justin, or is that Blu-ray and upscale?
No, that is actually it was natively made in HD, but it was it. I think it was one of the first full HD TV series. It's still 4x3, and B, there are a couple scenes where they clearly didn't have artwork that was intended to be rendered at 1080p. So there are a couple scenes where, like, the background is gorgeous and then, like, the characters are this pixelated glob.
So it's like watching the Ghost in the Shell compilation movies on Blu-ray.
Exactly. There are just some of it looks great, some of it doesn't, but on the whole, it's still way better than an upscale.
Huh. I was curious about the Media Blasters Blu-rays because I kind of wanted to get Morabito, but I wasn't sure how it looked.
Morabito, well, they didn't. This looks way better than Morabito, and I'm pretty sure that they just ripped the Blu-ray or the encode from the Japanese Blu-ray.
Mm.
So it looks a lot better. Yeah, Morabito, although it doesn't, it still, in my opinion, looks a hell of a lot better than the DVDs, but it's a little rough by Blu-ray standards.
I've always been wary of the Media Blasters Blu-rays because I always keep hearing, especially for their live action stuff, that their discs aren't good. But I heard from some people that their anime titles have been fine. I just hope that when Mazen Kaiser Skull comes out on Blu-ray later this year, it's the good Blu-ray as opposed to whatever else they've got coming out.
Agreed. Mazen Kaiser Skull, kids, put it on your Christmas list.
Are they actually releasing that?
Yes, they are.
They would. They said that the Blu-ray release would be contingent upon sales of the DVD, and I guess the DVD did well enough.
Wow. Did not see that coming.
Their bar must have been pretty low.
I got mine.
Yeah.
Well, going back to Kenshin for just a bit, I have not seen Trust and Betrayal. I know everyone went apeshit for it when it first came out, and I believe I really liked it, but I have not seen it since it came out. How does it hold up?
It holds up really, really well. I've only gotten one episode in so far, the first episode, you know, the really, really sad opening of that series, still had me in tears. It still moves way too fast and is a little hard to follow, but it's aged impeccably well, and the animation looks like it was done yesterday.
Nice. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it looks drop dead gorgeous. This is one of the one of my happy, holy crap, I'm happy I bought this discs in my collection. However, I do have to say, the packaging pisses me off.
What's wrong with the packaging?
I mean, does it have a reversible cover so you can put the Samurai X artwork out?
Well, it is the Japanese import with a little extra booklet that Aniplex USA has a translation for the Japanese booklet. But you need both. Which is fine.
Wait, so you have to go on the website for the translation of the booklet? Is that
no,
what you're
no,
saying?
No? There's two booklets. One has the English and one has the Japanese with all the pictures.
Ah, okay.
Right. So, but the packaging itself is a slipcase with a digipack.
Hmm.
Rocking like it's 2003.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know if I like that.
I will say outright, I do not like that. But hey, it's a Japanese import. What do you know?
Well,
what about the subtitles? Are they like that white borderless thing that Funimation uses, which, you know, it's perfectly readable on a monitor, but on a TV, sometimes those things get lost in the shuffle?
No, nice thick border. Okay. You know, slight weird kerning problems that are typical of using Japanese fonts to type English.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I still don't know why that happens or why they won't just use fucking Arial. It's on their computer.
Yeah, that would be nice. I don't know. Yeah, I'm excited now because literally minutes before we were taping this, UPS guy just dropped that off.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I guess I get to check that out.
Awesome.
Well, cool. One thing that has not aged well at all is that dub. Holy shit, that is a bad dub.
That dub was never even good when it first came out, to be fair.
Right. And now it's just, holy cow, I can't believe anyone found this acceptable.
That was the ADV Films B team. That was like the Austin cast, I think.
Why would they give this to the B team? This had to be one of their top sellers that year.
Yeah, it was big at the time.
And there's no way they wouldn't have known it wouldn't have been one of their top sellers, because that was like the hot property for its time.
Then again, did ADV ever have an A team at that point?
Well, it's just the fact that it seemed like when they had both Houston and Austin dubbing studios, like the top shelf stuff would be dubbed in Houston, and then the second tier stuff would go to Austin.
Right. And I have to say, for the record, both studios got really, really, really good towards the end of ADV's run. But man, back when they were dubbing this.
That stands to reason, though, because Kenshin has never been dubbed very well. The Media Blasters dub is one of the worst things. Like, it's horrible. And then there's that infamous... Then there's that infamous Samurai X dub on Crackle that's, like, one of the worst things committed, you know.
I love that dub more than my own son.
And it has the exact same Kenshin.
Yeah,
that's the best part. It has, like, the same cast in these weird overlapping spots.
Both poorly made LA dubs.
God. I think the best change in that dub was they renamed Yahiko to Yoshi, you know, to be more accessible.
Right.
Hey, kids love Yoshi from Mario Brothers. Makes sense to me.
I will say, thanks to that dub, while I was watching this Kenshin OVA, all I could think of was, are you Batusai the Manslayer?
Awesome. See, I have a problem just because it's never been dubbed well, but I've never really been sold on Mayo Suzukaze as Kenshin in the Japanese version. I can't get away from the fact that, you know, he opens his mouth and it's a lady. It's so obviously a lady.
Yeah.
Isn't that the default for most every major shonen protagonist at this point? I mean, you got Goku, Luffy, you know, Kenshin was just another one in the line.
Edward Elric. I don't know.
Some of those women pull it off better than others. Let's be honest here.
The voice for Luffy matches his cartoony personality. It fits. Goku's voice throws me. Kenshin's voice totally does as well. It's just too. It's that weird. It's a combination high pitched and nasal. It just doesn't sound like badass sword fighter or whatever. It just doesn't quite work. I'm with you on that, but I still obviously will always watch that show in Japanese. I'm not touching that dub. You know, they just couldn't figure out how to handle his speech patterns, and it's so awkward as a result. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of some of the choices they made for the Inuyasha dub that are equally as awkward. Daryl, what have you been checking out?
Well, on the subject of difficult to read subtitle fonts, I'm also watching Tiger and Bunny on Hulu, caught up completely. I actually just go with the closed captioning because that's the only one I can reliably see. Other than that, it's largely been not too much in anime. It's been other media. You know, we got video games to play. I got a new Deus Ex, finally, after all these years, a real one. And so I've been playing that. In terms of, like, American cartoons, if we're the League of Extraordinary Super Nerds, I've been, now that Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes is on Netflix, I've been throwing people to that. And that theme song is, it's one of those so bad, it's great sort of moments that, you know, makes you want to kill yourself. But another season starts up soon, so that's more or less where I've been up to, other than, like, putting together stuff for live-action Asian cinema panels and the likes. But, you know, keeps you busy.
So, anime-wise, pretty much just Tiger and Bunny.
More or less. I mean, I will admit I am watching the Blade anime just for completion's sake, and it is a vampire anime made by the Japanese.
All right. And all that implies.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I haven't touched any of that Marvel stuff, but it's on.
They're on G4 now.
Yeah, I know. I have G4 HD, and I just can't. They run them literally like once a week, which is really strange for a deep cable channel like that to not just run that shit into the ground. Usually when a deep cable channel has something like that, original programming or something new, they'll run it over and over and over and over again. But they only run it like the one time on Tuesdays, and I never remember to set it up to record.
Maybe they're contractually limited or something.
Probably. Something stupid like that.
That's a standard part of a TV agreement, but usually they get at least, you know, 5 or 6 runs. And for cable, that is weird.
Yeah, because I searched this, sat there scrolling through the G4, and it's like, when is this on? It's just the one time slot on, like, Tuesdays or something. But,
if the hope is to try and get people into the idea of watching anime on a station that isn't called the Cartoon Network, this is not the way to do it.
Yeah, it's not the world's greatest plan. I also got Deus Ex. I got to play it for maybe 10 minutes yesterday, and I'm looking forward to this weekend where I might actually have time to sit down with it. But it seems fun so far. I'm enjoying it.
Oh, did you ever play the original?
No, didn't even touch it. I had a
Dude. Dude.
Oh, yeah. See, you just rewatched the original Matrix movie, and Deus Ex, the original, is totally, you know, pulling from the same, like, cultural ether as the original Matrix film.
Well, I know I had a roommate in college, and I think I watched him play through, like, 75% of it. So that's sort of my experience with that game. But, yeah, no, it was kind of fortuitous that Amazon had that Matrix box set, Blu-ray set, down to $25, but they kind of stiffed everybody and made everyone wait like a month to get it. So I finally got it in the mail, and I'm revisiting those films now. And boy, the promise sitting in that box, that Animatrix set, it's just like, things could have been so different.
I own the Matrix like multiple times over in complete, like multiple times for the DVD. I think I've got the HD DVD, and then I went for the Blu-ray one because that was the only one that had Animatrix in 1080p.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. I had the HD DVD version too, and that came with $25,
huh?
Yeah, well, it was like 2 days. It was $25, and they sold out pretty quick. And I had to wait a month and a change to get it, but totally worth it. I'm happy I got it, and I'm really looking forward to digging back into the Animatrix because I loved that when it came out.
Oh, and it's amazing!
I'm looking forward.
Yeah,
to
the chapter skip button is you know what you use to re-experience the Matrix when you go back.
I am so surprised because when that movie came out, it was like, this is the most revolutionary fucking thing in the world. And watching it now, it feels like the most, like, really solidly constructed, very solidly constructed, extremely conventional late 90s action movie. Like, very conventional in terms of dialogue, storytelling structure. There's very little that's different about it that would differentiate it from what you'd expect from the experience of watching a late 90s action movie. I was a little taken aback by that. Maybe that's just because it's been ripped off and lifted from so much over the next 10 years that
Visual innovations were ripped off almost immediately.
But
it's the Gundam effect.
Yeah, right, exactly. But the dialogue is just so, they're constantly explaining things. What they'll do, the thing I love this in action movies, someone explains something in mild techno babble, and then somebody else restates it in a sort of smug, what he means to say is this. Like, you know, rephrasing it in kind of a smug action hero-y way. And that, mm-hmm. that happens over and over and over again in those movies. It's amusing to watch. But other than that, in terms of what I've been watching, I talked about it a little bit last week, and roughly a million questions from Twitter about this came in. But I did finally, I imported the Redline Blu-ray. And finally got to watch that after many moons of putting it off and not going to see it in the theater, which I now regret.
God, everyone's been losing their shit over Redline.
Yeah, they are. And I'm 100% in agreement with the hype. The only one of us that hasn't seen it is Mike, right?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater back in March.
Yeah, I did too. And I must admit up front that although I was not blown away by it, I did see the film in a state of overtired annoyance.
Yeah. So you want to describe those circumstances a little bit, because it's pretty much the worst possible conditions under which you could watch that movie.
Okay. It was a late night screening, which means it started at 1 a.m. officially, and they it was the Cine family here in Los Angeles, which is frankly the worst theater in the city. The seats are not comfortable and mostly wood. I was just appalled that they kept adding chairs in the aisles. I'm sure Fire Marshal is going to love that. And frankly, the projection kind of sucks. Yeah. So I was just, you know, me being videophile nerd, I was just full of anger. And it was 3 a.m. by the time it finished. And that movie is so fast-paced and hyperkinetic. It's just, it was too much. It was like being punched in the face multiple times. So I liked it. I respected it. But oh my God, did I not have a good time?
Yeah, that is. I mean, even I just watched it in my living room, and I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Yeah, I mean, I like those are bad circumstances. But at the same time, like knowing you, I think you would probably respect the film more than you actually legitimately really enjoyed it, because it is about 70% spectacle, 30% story.
Right.
And that's not
and really honestly, I when I saw it, my initial reaction was, I'll bet this is way more fun on Blu-ray than in a theater.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I got to turn my speakers up and everything. I would have liked to see it with a jazzed-up audience. Daryl, what was your experience like seeing it?
The audience was really receptive to it. They laughed at all the right parts. They cheered and such, and it made the film better, to be honest. Like, just the little things, like when you'd first see, like, a little quirk of a character and everyone would laugh, that would really – you wouldn't think to maybe – I don't know. I'm not really the type who laughs out loud at things if I'm watching something alone. But yeah, I thought it did help with the energy of the movie, which is already a pretty darn high energy film to begin with. So I think there was something to be said about seeing it in the crowd. I was just at Otakon, for example, on the subject of that, and they had a series of premieres there. One of which was the new Full Metal Alchemist movie, the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood movie. Mm-hmm. And that was another one where, seeing it in a crowd of, you know, roughly 2,000 really enthusiastic people who maybe are a little too enthusiastic, probably was to the benefit of the movie, because ultimately it is basically just like a Shonen Jump filler sort of movie.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I'm kind of disappointed by that. Actually, I'm really disappointed by that. I was kind of hoping that was going to be something.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, in terms of the action and spectacle scenes of it, is a cut above even Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, which is already like one of the high watermarks for action anime. But in terms of writing, they're just completely constricted by the fact that, well, nothing can really happen to these characters as far as development-wise goes.
And it follows the Shonen Jump formula of, oh, here's this, you know, special movie-only girl character voiced by Maya Sakamoto.
Let's spend 70% of the film's running time focusing on her.
Yeah.
No one in the audience is here to see her.
And by the way, I don't know if it actually is Maya Sakamoto, but I think there's a pretty good chance it is. So
maybe it's not her, it's some other idol.
Right.
But anyway, back to Redline. So I honestly think it might be the best anime I've seen in a long, long time. And all the hype and people losing their shit over it, I think it's just because it feels like no one makes shit like that anymore, and it is so representative of why I started liking anime in the first place, and why it spoke to me so much as a teenager, and why it still speaks to me visually now, and it's everything I would want. Like, I could show that to someone and say, look, here is a product that would not have been created by any other team of artists anywhere in the world. Like, this is a very unique thing, and I think that's what's so kind of exciting and thrilling about it. It feels a little like Akira.
Yeah, and that's actually exactly what my co-host Gerald said. He said this was the movie that he'd been waiting for since Akira, since Ghost in the Shell. For 15 years he'd been waiting for Japan to do another one in that vein, such that, you know, this was the kind of thing that grabs you and says, hey, this is cool and this is unique in this ever-expanding sea of media that we find ourselves in. Redline is one of those things, and I think that the fact that Japan didn't take to it at all, either theatrically or when it came out on video, is pretty disheartening.
Yeah, that's sad, because it means there probably won't be anything more like it, and they'll give up. But from what I understand, we're also saying similar things about Tiger and Bunny, and that show's a big hit, right?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Tiger and Bunny is a big hit. because it's the kind of show where it was a complete uphill battle to even get made. The notion of, what do you mean, we're not going to have a high school student as our main character? Somebody's actually going to have secondary male sexual characteristics? A beard? What is this? But no, it's...
It's like, what's this? He's over 30? He has a kid?
Well, let's take a step back and actually look at examine why Redline might have bombed in Japan, because I don't think it's quite as simple as the Japanese weren't interested. You know, obviously it failed to attract anybody but the hardest of hardcore anime as technical art fans. Obviously it wasn't going to attract most of the hardcore otaku now, which are all into moe. Yeah. It's simply not, you know, it has almost nothing to do with what they like. But clearly there's a big discrepancy here in what they were trying for and what the film thought was cool and what Japanese society thinks is cool.
Well, do you see it as a failure of marketing necessarily? I mean, a part of it is I look at it and I think, so did people just not know it was out? Did they see the trailer?
That could be it. I mean, these things get a really small theatrical run in Japan. We're talking like the American equivalent of a small art house release.
Right.
A couple of screens. Tough.
Yeah, like two or three screens, and they do these, you know, they travel it around the country, basically.
Right. Ticket prices are like $20.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is we can't analyze the box office like we can here. Right. You know, I can tell you why, you know, Fright Night and Conan the Barbarian flopped over the weekend, because there's a mountain of analysis out there about it. But I have no idea why Redline was not a failure, was not a success in Japan. Couldn't tell you why. It might have been marketing. They might have botched the release and like only opened it on one screen in an area where the audience might not have been hip to it. You know, any number of reasons it could have tanked.
How do we explain the video not really selling either? I mean, you would think that theatrically, I mean, there are plenty of films that don't seem to find their audience in the theater, but then they come out on Blu-ray and DVD or, you know, what have you, and people say, oh, that's a movie I was thinking to check out, but I missed it, and now I can see it, and then it does quite well for itself. But that isn't happening either. Not very many people in Japan bought this, and something tells me that, I don't know, I would have seen that coming, but apparently nobody else did.
I'll draw this analog, and we don't have to talk about the film itself. I'm just drawing an analog. The closest analog I can think of here is Scott Pilgrim, which tanked in the theaters, actually did not do well on DVD and Blu-ray when it first came out. It kind of, you know, it didn't set the world on fire or anything, even though everyone assumed it would. That movie didn't actually really start finding its audience until HBO started running it nonstop. They ran it pretty much over and over and over again, and then suddenly it started trending on Twitter again, and everyone was back into it, and then they started selling DVDs. And not only that, the DVD price, you know, a lot of stores started dropping it down to $10.
$10
on Blu-ray, and then it finally started moving. So what you're looking at here is it's harder to build a cult phenomenon around something when people can't get it super cheap or free or easily. You know, If HBO were running Redline, or some movie channel was running it a lot, it would get attention. People would be like, what is this weird thing on my TV? And maybe they'd be drawn into it. It's harder and harder now to build that kind of a cult following. You might make a coolest movie in the world, and if you don't know where your audience is and you can't target them and you just can't find the audience, that's going to kill your movie. I mean, so that might have been what happened to Redline. I don't know. I'm so glad it exists and got made, and I have it in my house. That's really what I'm glad for.
I would love to have it in my house, but unfortunately, they had to stop the dreaded reverse importation, and they sure showed us all by not having it ready for us, you know, sooner. But
I don't think that was why.
I guess we got 6 months to go, and then we can own Redline here.
Yeah. Well, you know, meanwhile, you type Redline torrent into Google, you'll sure find it fast that way.
Yeah, 50,000 people did.
That's a shame. But I mean, there's nothing. There's no way of stopping that. But one thing I did want to say about it in terms of film's quality, and one of the things that I appreciate even more now is, even looking back on Akira and Ghost in the Shell, those films, while classics and I love them both, are a little impenetrable story wise. Redline is actually a very solidly written, easy to grasp, but very clever and you know, just well put together script. It's a neat science fiction concept that isn't too complicated or difficult to follow. You have solid, likable characters that you do care about by the end of the film. It is not, Justin. Okay, there's no teenage ennui. Okay. Sorry.
I like all the characters quite a bit.
I like the characters. They're
likable. I don't dislike them. I don't think they're... Okay, fine.
They're not fascinating. I don't want to, you know, roll around in their angst, but they're solid hero, heroine type characters with some flaws. They give them interesting or at least decent backstories. It's not a mess, is what I'm saying. The writing is good. It doesn't shit the bed. It doesn't suddenly get really super confusing and weird and you don't know what's happening. Like, everything makes pretty much sense all the way through to the end, and I love the silly ending where it just says love on the screen. So silly, but it totally works in the context of the film. And it,
you know, why I think that is?
What's that?
I think a lot of the credit for that goes to Katsuhiro Ishii, who is traditionally a live-action film director.
Yeah.
He's got experience making... but he's got experience making movies in that format. And yeah, they are kind of bizarre indie sort of, you know, those weird Japan sort of movies that people like to throw around. But it is quickly, in my opinion, becoming sort of a lost art of how to pace and structure a story narratively to begin, middle, and end within the context of a film. I think a lot of the people working in anime are just so used to TV that when they're given a movie to do, they try to basically do a long TV episode. And I think Ishii, by virtue of having worked on several films in the past, which are similarly like bombastic kinetically, but also very subtle in their character development, I think that really helped Redline's script from not becoming that crazy mess, like where suddenly at the end everything is just rush, trying to fit everything together like you see so often in anime feature films. So if you like Redline, for those of you listening, and you want to know what else you got out there like that, Japan, maybe not quite so much anime, but in live action film land, you may want to check out some of Ishii's other works.
Well, also just in terms of there not being a bunch of weird, meaningless expository dialogue that explains things that don't seem like they're important to the story and ultimately go nowhere, which is an issue in anime screenwriting, where it's like they pretend there's going to be something after this that explains all of that to you, or like a book or something that's not accessible to us. You know, Akira was like that. It was very confusing when it first came out. It was infamous for being really difficult to understand what the hell's going on in that story.
Especially that streamlined dub.
No one's really holding Akira up as a pinnacle of good storytelling.
Right. I'm just saying Redline's a total package, and I noticed that it also had a decent script, and I was very happy with that. That made me pleased.
So did you guys hear the joke I made before I got shaken off the call there for a minute?
No,
we didn't hear a word you said.
Didn't hear a word I said. Oh, I was just going to say, no, I think the real reason Justin wasn't that into the movie was because the main character wasn't a little boy who was just so hungry.
And then a narrator saying, oh, look, I sure hope you can get some food. Oh, there's some. A bird took it.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. So the other thing I watched actually today, was getting through Spice and Wolf 2, which I don't know why I'm inexplicably sort of drawn to that show. Well, actually, no, I was thinking about that. I'm like, why do I watch this? Because it
naked girl with a wolf tail.
Yeah, that's well, actually not it. That is actually not it.
I mean, did they replace Kraft Lawrence with Jason Bateman?
No. No, they did not. That is a weird
name. I had to make that joke.
The thing about that show is I think it's just very unique for what it is. And I'm not used to seeing those themes even touched upon in anything else. I mean, so I'm watching this second season today, and I got through the first like 7 or 8 episodes. And the first half of the second season is literally insider trading and marketing and market manipulation at the medieval version of Burning Man. You couldn't really use that phrase to describe any other show out there, so I'll take it. I think that's why I'm sort of drawn to it, is the fact that
the
it's
money
not,
adventures.
It's not like anything else out there, and I really appreciate different now more so than anything else.
I definitely like it. I haven't seen season two yet, but one thing I really enjoy about it is just the fact that you have Kraft and Holo, and neither of them really tiptoes around the fact that they like each other.
But yeah, I mean, it is a show where they don't spend the 26 episodes dancing around the will they, won't they, hold each other's hand.
It's a very Cheers-esque relationship where they clearly are into each other, and there's a lot of, you know, sort of flirty back and forth, and it's very it's contentious but sort of pleasant in a way. It doesn't feel creepy or weird or awful or anything like that. I find the fan service tiresome, but whatever, that's gonna be in there no matter what you do. I will say one thing: the animation is fucking terrible. I don't know what they're doing, but the animation looks bad. And I'm watching this thing on Blu-ray, and it's just highlighted how little effort they put into character animation on that show. It's just not good. There's like one or two well-animated sequences in every episode, and not even in every episode, like every other episode. There's something that's like, oh, that looks okay. But the rest of the time, man, it looks like shit. It must not have had much money to put the show together. But
despite being entirely about economics.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that, you know, in terms of what's currently airing in Japan, I actually have no idea what I'll be watching 3 months from now coming out in Japan. Whereas I could tell you, in terms of American TV, exactly what I'll be watching for the next several months. Like, once one thing ends, this next thing starts, and so on and so forth. But as I look at the list of what's coming out in Japan, the only thing I can really look forward to are OAVs, things that are continuations of things I already like. Like, oh, finally another Helsing. I know they just did another Helsing Ultimate. You know, another Black Lagoon episode, et cetera, et cetera. But what is the next, like, anime TV series that I'm going to be watching in a few months? You got me.
Well, I mean, those things don't really firm up until, you know, almost right before they start. I mean, I don't know what to expect until I actually start watching the shows, and I have to. It's not like I have a choice. It's my job to watch that stuff and write about it. I'm at the point where I don't even really read plot synopses anymore. I just click on the episode when it shows up on Nico Nico or YouTube, or not YouTube, Crunchyroll or whatever.
I think a lot of people are like that. It's just, oh, here's a new thing I never heard of. Time to check it out. Have you actually, I figured since you were such a big Utena fan, have you been watching Penguin Drum?
No, I haven't, and it's one of the, I hope someone licenses it. I don't know. I'm weird about that kind of thing. You know, I tend to only use fan subs when I feel like I kind of have to, and I don't have to watch that show. I really want to see it, but I don't have to watch it. So somebody please license it, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Is it worth licensing?
So far, the answer is yes. I think it's pretty interesting stuff. I don't want to go too into it if no one else has seen it. But yeah, it's certainly, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's the second coming of Utena, because who knows? This thing could easily fall off the rails. But so far, what they have shown is actually pretty interesting. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm a super huge fan of it as everybody else is. But, you know, it's not like I'm watching it and dreading, you know, wow, what happened to you, Ikuhara, or anything like that. So yeah, I hope it gets a shot, because when I look at the things that are coming out through Crunchyroll or what have you, very little of it is grabbing my attention. And I think maybe that's becoming a trend for a lot of other people. Like, have you seen that the Noitamino block is even sort of going the otaku route soon, what they're doing, the Black Rock Shooter anime?
No, I didn't see that. That's
It is. It's kind of disheartening, because the whole purpose of Noitamina as a project was to put out anime that was more palatable to a diverse audience, not just the otaku only crowd. And if you want to think the antithesis of that, Black Rock Shooter is it. Nothing inherently against Black Rock Shooter, but it's totally an otaku title.
Well, on the plus side of things, the current season Noitamina show Usagi Drop, it's on episode 8, so that means there's only 3 episodes left, and still no sign of grossness. So, hey, knock on wood.
Oh right, the manga developments.
Yeah.
I hope they just don't even go there. I hope they just let the series end at a point and just say, "Yep, that is the ending of the show. Have a nice day." And if you want the manga, it's over there.
Maybe, I mean, I know there's a time skip, so that's a good place. Maybe they could just drop it. I think it's only 12, 12 or 13, right?
11.
It's 11.
11. Okay.
No, Chinaman shows always go 11.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so they're not going to get that far. Unless the show is massively popular and they decide to animate all that there is. I suppose they could go that way. I hope they do not. I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping, I'm waiting for the end of that. And then when someone says, hey, it's all clear, maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. I hear it's very charming and cute. I only saw the first episode. It's okay.
I liked it quite a bit. I've only seen bits and pieces of it because I'm still putting it up for streaming in Australia and the UK.
Right.
But yeah, from what I can tell, it's still adorable.
Well, that's most of it. I mean, there's a live action movie that was supposed to be, I guess. Well, I don't know about the quality of it, but they did put out a live action movie for that. And I doubt they would go that way.
That was a sex scene.
Go the creepy way with the the live action movie. Hey, Gavalt. All right. Okay. So that about wraps up. You know what I've been watching. But the one thing I did want to bring up before we get to Twitter, and we got a lot of Twitter questions. This is going to be a mostly Twitter show. Someone on Twitter asked me if I was a fan of Spice and Wolf. And I said, and I thought about that for a minute, and I said, well, no, I'm not. I wouldn't call myself a fan of Spice and Wolf. I enjoy the show. I like how unique it is. I'm entertained by it. But
you watch it.
I watch it. It's just something I watch. And it occurs to me that these days it seems like the word fan, and I don't mean in terms of like being a good fan or a bad fan or any of that kind of shit, but the word fan just kind of is meaningless now. It just means you like something or you enjoy it. Like, I'm a fan of anything that I watch regularly, I guess, and that didn't sit well with me. I really disagreed with that. It's like, I'm a big fan of Utena, Berserk, Helsing, all that stuff. Those are shows I would call myself a fan of. Those are shows I would buy merchandise for, buy DVDs, buy stuff and support, and more so than just paying to watch it initially.
Definitely.
You know,
Doctor Who, on the other hand.
Yeah, not a fan of Doctor Who. I don't even really like Doctor Who, but I don't dislike Doctor Who, but I'm not really a fan.
Well, since you don't like it enough, you're still going to get hate mail.
Exactly.
Right.
No,
not liking it enough is the biggest crime, Zach.
Right, exactly. No, I understand. And to that point, I try not to rag on Doctor Who that much at all, because I don't really have a problem with the show. I just have a problem with people trying to force feed it to me.
I know the feeling all too well. But yeah, I think you're definitely onto something. I think in the past there was sort of a maybe unspoken agreement that to say you're a fan of something entailed you had some sort of involvement beyond the mere consumption of the show in question or the film in question. It meant that maybe you were willing to, you know, expend some sort of effort on your part to either learn something more about the show than you would from just seeing it, or engage with, you know, other people who are, you know, consuming the same thing you are, get in discussions about it, speculate, and yes, also monetarily support it through purchases. But now you're right. People say, oh, I'm a big fan of so-and-so's show, but I don't actually own it or anything like that. And so to me, I kind of think like, okay, well, you're watching it.
Well, this is really something that's only an issue in the community of hardcore media nerds. I mean, I think most, if you ask for the definition of the word fan to any normal person, they'd go, yeah, like, I'm a Jersey Shore fan. I'll watch it when it's on. So
oh,
I'm
sure.
Like,
this is fandom terminology we're getting into now.
Yeah, so I think this becomes a matter of splitting the definition of what it means, what the word means to the world, and what the word means to us. Maybe we need a different word.
On the streets, we refer to this as jargon. So maybe we don't necessarily need a whole new word, because if there's anything that's annoying the crap out of me, it's when fans of certain things come up with their own specific term that really is wholly unnecessary. Like, it maybe just means person who enjoys this thing. Bronies. But, you know, I think...
Go to any Daryl, go to any science fiction convention where they refer to fans as plural as fen. Like
fen, that's right.
Ugh, cool. That happens?
Yes, oh, yeah, that's an old-time sci-fi thing. And, you know, you've also seen, like, people coming up with terms for the non-fans, like mundanes, and that's the point where I'm like, okay, stop right there. This has to, you know, cut off right here. But, yeah, I think fan is used, like, on the internet, like, posting on various nerd zones. Yeah, to me, that means more than you just you watch it. But in terms of common parlance, yeah, sure. You're a fan of something if you happen to consume it on a regular basis. Why not?
Let's face it. What we do as fans is so far and above beyond what anybody outside of the normal, you know, outside of hardcore media nerds would do for anything, that there really is no parallel in normal jargon for what we do.
But Justin, I read on the internet that you hate anime.
Well, I do. I hate MD Geist. I hate Orotsuki Doji.
Yeah.
The point is that we don't hate or love anime holistically, unconditionally. We hate some anime and we love some anime. And it works like that.
There are many different levels of this hatred. It's nuanced.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the thing. It's not a black and white. It's absolutely not a black and white thing. And everybody defines these things on their own, in their own head. Like, to me, fan means maybe double dip. You know, I already own the DVD and then I bought the Blu-ray. So, fan of that. Fan means really looking forward to the next episode, evangelizing it, telling people about it. I wouldn't evangelize about Spice and Wolf. Certainly not.
Yeah. Well, to me, a fan of Spice and Wolf is someone who at least has the novels, maybe the manga, and maybe one of them hug pillows.
I was going to throw in the hug pillows joke, but I knew you were on the ball.
Yeah. No, that's a big part of it. And I don't like that part of it just doesn't exist for me. That has nothing to do with why I enjoy the show. But, that's true for a lot of fans, I think, where fan also means sexually attracted to the characters. Like, that probably does define a lot of people's fandom. I'm not, you know, saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but I think that is a big thing.
But it also doesn't mean we're not going to make fun of you on the internet.
There you go. Well, exactly, of course. But I think that is, like, a big thing. Like, a lot of, I wonder how many, that's curious. I wonder how many people define, like, maybe subconsciously define their fandom in terms of how much they beat off to the characters. Like, because that's a big thing in anime fandom, sadly.
I rate this show 4 squirts.
Yeah. Right. Well,
I've noticed on sites like Fandom Secrets that the subset of fandom that is really into fan fiction tends to view themselves monolithically, and I find that extremely strange.
How do you mean?
Like, well, I mean that, you know, I'll see postings along the lines of, you know, someone will post a lament with a picture of a popular band saying, why isn't there a fandom for this? And they're talking about fan fiction. They want to see fan fiction about this band or this thing or whatever. And I just think, what, you think there's not a fandom for you too? What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, someone's going to those concerts, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Is that a real example? Like, why isn't there a fandom for...
Yes, that is actually a concrete example.
I think U2 doesn't have any fans because there's no one writing fan fiction about Bono doing whatever with his guitarist. That's... Wow, so...
To be fair, that is an anomaly. I mean, I really terrified a friend of mine by finding Coldplay fan fiction.
Wow.
Oh, hey, you know, the soccer games I go to, there's fan fiction, there's slash fan fiction about real sports figures. And the players know about this, and they're kind of freaked out by it.
There is a whole blog dedicated to Whitest Kids You Know fan fiction.
Yeah, that's getting out there. Actually, for some reason, a week or two ago, I was in the mood for Otter Pops, and I bought the big, you know, box of 100 Otter Pops, and the characters on the Otter Pops, they have little bios on the side of the box, and I saw that, and the immediate first thing that came to mind was, I wonder if there's fan fiction for Otter Pops.
And there was.
I didn't look. But I guess I should.
There's gonna be.
Curious if there's like slash fic between Sir Henry Lime and Alexander the Grape. Or whatever.
Well, now that you said it, Zach, somebody
will
make it.
The forum thread will link me to Erotic Little Orphan Orange fan fiction.
That is okay, literally yeah. one notch below Mr. Book fan fiction.
I, for one, am waiting for the next Twitter installment of the Harry Potter Mpreg fanfic that somebody out in Boston, I believe, is writing involving me being impregnated by Severus Snape. And they're just sending me these messages on Twitter one at a time, like, you know, once every week or two. And it's funny, but it's also like, all right, they're trying to get under my skin. It's not working. It's just, you know, incredibly bizarre.
This conversation is taking a very dark turn.
It really has. I'm being serious when I say I'm sorry I went for the fanfic angle.
Well, but I think it's just a personal thing. And, you know, I guess like me saying like, well, I'm irritated because it doesn't seem to mean anything. I guess it's one of those words that now it has to be personally defined, kind of like geek and nerd, which are totally
and otaku,
meaningless in terms of like if you got a room full of nerds together and tried to define nerd, good luck. Like, you're not going to be able to do it. Everyone will have their own personal peccadilloes about exactly what it means and who it's referring to. And that's, I guess maybe that's just the way vocabulary operates now in the age of the internet.
Yeah, and I don't know if I like that, because the trouble is that if everyone's not agreeing to definitions, you can't have a real conversation.
Yeah, because that's what you wind up getting stuck in, this pedantic conversation where you're splitting hairs about exactly what we're talking about before we actually talk about it.
Such that you never end up talking about it.
Yeah, right. Which is bad.
That's the internet.
We have a mountain of Twitter questions, and we should probably get to them, I think.
Let's climb that.
Seeing as how we're already 45 minutes into this.
Yes, well, these episodes usually go long.
Dude, that's okay. 20 minutes of that was me dropping the call.
Yeah, I was about to say, a good 20 minutes of that is dead air. So,
true.
Okay, from Anime Ev, it's from the site anime.me. For all of us, what are some of the amazing shows, in quotes, that you felt disappointed by? I guess
well, by this, I think he means like shows that have been sold to us as watch this. You got to see this. This is great. It's incredible. And then you watch it and it's like, really? That's it? I'm sure the most inflammatory response, you know, I could say would be Evangelion was all right, I guess. But
I was going to say Furikuri.
Yeah, all those things are potential lightning rods. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really see what the huge deal was over Haruhi Suzumiya. I mean, I watched it and I'm like, hey, this is solid. It's above average, certainly. But does it really warrant like this much mania? Maybe I'm missing something, or maybe people have just gotten so used to accepting mediocrity as excellence that if you get something that's above average, it's the greatest thing that they've ever seen.
Well, the truth is there's a lot of good shows, but everyone's going to make that big emotional connection with something slightly different. But so I'm not sure it's fair to just list the shows that everyone loves and we just like. What about shows that everyone loves and we just like? What is this?
I'm going to say
there are plenty of those.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt.
Check.
That everyone lost their fucking minds over. And I said, hey, this is unfunny shit. It's not even...
God, that was unwatchable.
It's not clever. It's just like, hey, poop cocks. Like,
I enjoyed it a great deal because it was, hey, poop cocks.
Maybe that Funimation. Hey, word to Funimation. Retitle the show. Hey, poop cocks. There you go. That's my advice to you. No, I just didn't find it. It. You know, there's a way to do that kind of humor, and I consume so much comedy, and I've seen it done really, really well, and that just wasn't funny to me. I don't know.
I'll say this. I agree with you. I don't think the show is funny, even though it's ostensibly a comedy, and yet I think there's enough going on in that show that I liked it a lot anyway. Just take that for what it's worth.
Aesthetically and, I mean...
Yeah, aesthetically, direction-wise, you know, some of the, like, I don't know... Some of the references and such amused me, but, you know, I don't really say, hey, something I recognize, oh, this is automatically good because I know what Star Wars is. I don't work that way. But, yeah, I think there is, you know, enough interesting things, like, from a technical standpoint and some of the other things like that, that I was like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty impressive. But, yeah, I can see where you're coming from 100%, where it's like, oh, this isn't really funny.
Well, no, and that's the exact point that I made any time I ever talked about the show was I'm happy that they're taking chances with the way the show looks and that it's successful, and I hope this encourages other studios to break out of the aesthetic box that they're in and try new things. I absolutely wished for its wild success. I absolutely did. Just personally, I got nothing out of it aside from it looks kind of neat, kind of looks like you know, Cartoon Network, Johnny Test or whatever, you know, okay, fine. That's cool. But yeah, just people just lost their shit. And I was just like, really?
I'm struggling. I can't really think of something that is broadly popular that I despise.
Well, not despise, I mean, just like you watched
despise
it.
Despise so much as like, what is this? Like, High School of the Dead is one of those for me.
Oh, Black Butler then would be one for me. It's not that bad of a show, but I look at it and I just think the hooks to it seem so obvious to me.
For me, it's virtually anything by Clamp.
Mm.
Yeah.
Virtually anything.
And Blood Sea is not going to change your mind on that. I know they didn't really do that show proper, but I mean, it's their designs.
They had a lot of input.
I like their artwork. I really do, but I've
that's
yet
they do.
To
they draw.
Yeah.
They draw real well. Writing?
Exactly. I mean, it's like, I'm sorry. I'm here for the story. I mean, it could be animated with stick figures, and I'd watch it if it had a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to think about that, because fandom collectively loses its mind about something. And where am I on the bandwagon? I was not really super into Haruhi Suzumiya either. I recognize the show has a certain quality to it. I dinged it for what I thought was being sort of fake satire. But I didn't like hate it or anything. I understood why people liked it so much. I just didn't personally respond to it that strongly.
And that's where you get into the worst arguments. That's what I mean when I say the worst thing you can do is not like something enough. Yeah. When I watch something and say, okay, well, this is all right, I guess, but I don't really think it's that great. I don't like despise it or anything. When you run into the super fan, they'll get more incensed at me for having that opinion than they would at the person who just outright says it sucks.
Yeah, and I think that's because it feels like you're even further invalidating their opinion. It's not that great. Is almost worse than it's bad, because you're telling the person, look, why are you so excited about this thing? You're wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you say that it's terrible, then the other person can safely write you off. If you just say, well, it's not that great, that, you know, you're threatening their own view of it. It might make them stop and think, wait a minute, what if he's onto something?
Oh yeah, totally. And hey, I've run into that before myself. I've had that reaction where someone's like, look, it wasn't that great, and I'll be like, what's wrong with you? Like, it's a very easy emotion to fall prey to. It's silly. But it is a very easy emotional fall prey to. I think actually Justin has done that to me so many times that I don't respond to it anymore.
And you with me.
And right, vice versa. okay, moving on.
Next question.
All right. ABCB Tom wants to know, will Redline save anime, or is it the death rattle of the old guard?
Oh, I thought
neither?
Neither.
I thought ABCB Tom wanted to know which our favorite Precure was.
Milky Holmes Detective. He wanted to know what our favorite Milky Holmes Detective was.
I've never seen the show.
I'm aware that it's a show that a lot of people on my Twitter feed watch and hate, but they also keep watching it to get angry.
Yeah.
And that's all I know about the show.
Well, in terms of the Redline question, it's neither. It's a movie that came out and didn't do as well as we all sort of wanted it to, but a lot of us old timers really like it, and I don't think it's a zeitgeist or epoch-making moment or anything like that. I think it's just a thing to get excited about right now.
Well, at the same time, it is going to be possibly as a result of that reception one of the last movies of its kind, perhaps.
Maybe.
Or at least we won't be seeing another one like it for some time. So
I think it's a misnomer to call it an old guard thing, because the director is like 30.
Yeah.
And he's been working on it for 10 years.
Is Takashi Koike that young?
Takashi Koike is not very... Well, he was working on like Wicked City and stuff back in the early 90s. So, I mean, yeah, he could have been working there for, you know, when he was a teenager, for all I know.
I think he's in his late 30s or early 40s. And yeah, he was working on Wicked City like when he was 18.
I think he might even be younger than that, because we had him for Big Apple Anime Fest, and he was still so young that all of the girls were, like, cooing over him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
In terms of the film, I think the reason that you can look at it and say, oh, this is for old school fans, is because it looks like it is. It has an aesthetic sense to it that is not new anime. New anime, like, if you said, like, what does modern anime look like, I would point you to Madoka Magica. If you asked me, like, what does old anime look like, I would point to Akira, and I could also point to Redline, because it looks like it's from the late 80s aesthetically. It really does. It's like a hyped up, super you know, kinetic version of that, but it definitely does look like that. And a big part of that is the fact that all the mechanics are hand-drawn, which really adds to the visual quality of the film. That movie would look like crap if everything was CG, but it's not.
Right, because nowadays people don't know how to draw cars and helicopters and such without doing a CG model of it.
Yeah, and as a result, the movie looks very lush and expensive, and like they spent a lot of time and money on it, which they did. But that looks like it's old, because if all those cars had been CG and shit, it would have been like, okay, well, this is modern anime. But it's definitely a throwback in the fact that the whole thing is hand drawn. So that's what makes it feel old. I would argue that it's absolutely modern and vital, in terms of just the way the film is constructed. It's totally relevant to a modern audience. But I can definitely see why people would look at it as, oh, this is for the old timers, because it's not Madoka Magica, I guess.
And at least for whatever it's worth, at least whatever Takeshi Koike's next project is, he's got a next project. It's not going to be one of those things where this is a movie and we're not going to see anything from him for the next decade.
Yeah, it's not a career killer, I don't think.
Though I doubt he'd spend 11 years on a movie again.
Yeah. All right. Scott Spaziani asks, watching through UC Gundam and just finished Zeta as a completionist, should I even bother with Double Zeta? Mike, what do you think?
Oh boy, I'll let Mike start.
Well, the problem with Double Zeta is that Tomino, he never came out and said it, but I've always felt like he effectively tried to wreck Gundam with the way he started into Double Zeta, because it's almost a sitcom. for a good part of its run. I mean, I tell people to just think of it as Scooby-Doo, where, you know, the Mystery Machine Gang is Judo and his pals, and you know, the cantankerous old villain is Haman Khan. I think it is worth sticking with, but you're going to be in for a shock after just how dark Zeta is. Double Zeta is very lighthearted for much of its run, and then it comes all the way around the bend and gets dark as well.
That's the thing about Double Zeta, is that it doesn't have a cutoff point where you can say the first X many episodes are like this, and then from this point on, it changes. That isn't the case here. It alternates between the screwy goofball comedy stuff, oftentimes in which the comedy involves some of the cast of Zeta Gundam, so it's that much more jarring. And then at some point they realize, hey, wait a second, we've got to build up to this theatrical film that's coming out, you know, in the following year, Shaw's Counterattack. And so we've got to lay that foundation work. And so even up to like the very last set of episodes, there are episodes that are serious and more in line with the Universal Century Gundam. And then there are episodes that are, you know, wacky hijinks, as it were, with some, you know, goofball characters. So it is the hardest to recommend to people as Double Zeta Gundam. It's almost completely superfluous as far as these characters and what happens affecting the storyline. Skip to Shaw's Counterattack.
Yeah, you can get away with that, absolutely. That's the thing. It's certainly non-essential. But if he's talking about being a completionist, then, well, yeah, watch it. It's not bad. It's solid.
All right.
It's a divisive show, though.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of divisive, XP Saint asks, why do mecha fans get so fixated on what makes show fit its franchise or genre instead of quality?
I don't understand the question at all.
I think what he's trying to say is with regards to, let's say if there's a new version of Votoms, which there is, or if there's a new Gundam series coming out, which there are a few, there's always going to be a contingent of people who says, that's not what that franchise is supposed to be like. And they have some set series of defining traits of said property for which they can say, yes, it satisfies this. And now we have a true, for example, Macross series. I think that's what he's getting at. And I think the reason for this is that a lot of what has been done to make mecha, you know, as an overall umbrella, more appealing to the general audience — when I say general audience, I mean general anime viewing audience — is to basically shoehorn in the existing fetishes that other anime subgroups have and put them into your robot show. To say, like, okay, you like robots, but you like these other things too, so now we'll take those other things and put them into a show that happens to have robots in it. And is everybody happy? And so the answer, what these people are looking for, is no, I'm not happy because what I got into this for was something else. And now robots are sort of just an afterthought. I think maybe if I used a concrete example, the most high profile thing I can think of is Code Geass. A lot of fans of that show. It happens to have robots in it. In my personal experience, when I encounter most Code Geass fans, if I ask them why do they like it, they don't say it's because it's got robots in it.
I don't even think of that as a mecha show, even though I'm cognizant of the fact that there's mecha in it.
And when I say that, I get into a lot of trouble.
I think this kind of boils down to...
Okay, that's what that's about. All right.
We talk a lot about checklist shows and the notion of a checklist show and what a checklist show is. And I think this is about purity of the checklist. And for a lot of fans, the purity of the checklist is more important than the quality of the show. It's more important than the script. It's more important than the character writing. It's more important than anything, the checklist. The show has this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing, and this thing. Okay, I can put it in this little box over here, and I know where it exists, and I've defined what that show is, and I am happy with it. And the checklist is very important to a lot of people. And mecha fans are no different. They got their checklist, too.
That's interesting. So, Daryl, have you seen the latest Botom show at all?
I have not seen it. I've seen the promotional artwork for it, and I realize, wow, they're making a Votom show that has drastically different art, doesn't have any of the recurring cast, so I can kind of see where some of the grievances could come from. Well, but, I love Mazinkaiser Skull, and Mazinkaiser Skull has nothing to do with anything Gonagai has ever done before. There are no characters carried over, there are no villains carried over, but in terms of the feel of it, in terms of the mood and stuff, it is definitely what I want out of that sort of thing. Well, whether or not Votoms is that, I don't know.
Does this new Votom show have scope dogs at all?
Yes. So therefore, that is basically what I want is the scope dogs. The robots are called scope dogs. Yeah. And that's basically what I'm looking
for. They have this cool thing where they have wheels on their feet called a roller dash with a very distinctive sound effect. As long as it has that, I say it's Votoms.
You know, just as an observation here, it's amazing to me how much of what we're talking about, things that cause fans to reject a show, is simply doing something different. You know, doing anything deviational from the norm, which is what we complain about in the first place.
I was going to say, isn't that what we're supposed to want?
That was the joke I had on my own show, the notion that the Gundam fans in particular are particularly impossible to satisfy. Like, they look at Gundam Unicorn and Gundam The Origin, which are, you know, very... You know, the UC, the old style Gundam, and they say, this is just a rehash of what we've seen before. We want to see something new. And then when the promo for Gundam Age comes out, which is the very child-friendly, you know, version, they're like, this isn't Gundam. This is like some kiddie goofiness. And it's like, okay.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to both, man. That's the thing. I can't wait. I'm going to devour both of them.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who what they want is... Hold on. What they want is something that is very much like the things they've seen before. They got their checklist and they can fill everything on the checklist while at the same time giving them a feeling that is something they've never felt before in their life. And that is virtually impossible.
And keep in mind that if you hew to that thinking, we never would have gotten G Gundam. And I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have G Gundam.
It's so fascinating.
No one wants to, Mike. No one wants to live in a world where there's no G Gundam.
Even beyond anime, I mean, this is a huge problem. Basically, you try to do something a little bit different, and audiences reject it as too different.
And then complain. So, and then complain
simultaneously saying they want something different.
And then bitching nonstop about remakes.
And reboots.
And sequels. And, yeah.
Yeah. No, you cannot win.
Yeah, you just can't win. People don't really know what they want. They know what they want when they see it. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the response to G Gundam. I mean, that one in particular had the most vehement backlash by Gundam fans. But this year at the Otakon Sunrise panel, and, you know, Sunrise almost never does panels, one of the things that got the biggest reaction was G Gundam. And you could see the executives were a little surprised at that because I guess over the years people have changed their mind on that one. And I always loved it.
It's become an ironic thing because the Mexican Gundam and the Holland Gundam and... It's all very ironic.
No, I think its fandom that it has now is absolutely sincere.
You think so?
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who watched it, you know, you forget that when that aired on Cartoon Network, a lot of the people who are in anime fandom now were little kids watching that. So that thing is their Transformers Generation 1.
Yeah, well, I'll choose to believe your positive approach rather than my cynical approach. All right. We touched on this before, but if anyone has anything more to say about it, AngelX03 says, talk about your feelings about Noe Tamine's recent shift towards picking a titles with more otaku appeal. That's disappointing, but, you know, got to keep the lights on.
Yeah,
I haven't seen any of them. I mean, is Anohana really that, is it mediocre, or?
I think they're referring more to Black Rock Shooter as being, like, the sign that a tide is turning sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, I want Noe Tamine to succeed, but it's also something that's very plain to see that these shows are not ratings juggernauts by and large. I mean, you know, Eden of the East is fairly well received, but almost all of them are good. And so if they have to make every once in a while the gimme, you know, commercial thing to keep the experimental Masaki Yuasa type stuff coming, I'll live with it.
Well, they had a couple real bombs of seasons, and they're basically just trying to make up for them now. It seems like a reactive move to me, and I'm hoping that it'll eventually balance out into accessible but good shows like we were getting, like, you know, Paradise Kiss and Honey and Clover and things like that.
Yeah, Tatami Galaxy was another one that we watched at this little anime club I'm going to, and that was received well there as well.
Oh yeah,
that's your mythical anime club consisting almost entirely of people over 30, right?
we meant to hit on this, and I forgot to get to it before we went into Twitter. But tell us briefly a little bit about what this thing is that you found, because that sounds like you're making it up. To be frank,
I found it via meetup.com, which is, you know, a website designed specifically to bring hobbyists and enthusiasts of everything under the sun together. And yeah, there's a group of fans in Boston who formed a little anime group. And the thing is, it was kind of moribund for years. There was nothing happening on it. And then suddenly someone took it over who was really into the idea of organizing. And now there's things happening every week. And for the most part, it's not a college thing. It's professionals in their 20s and early 30s. And yeah, there's enough of a mixture of people that I've been talking with a couple of the members about forming a club specifically for fans over 30. And it's just very relaxing. You know, there's one member who lives in an apartment complex with a huge common room. Once a month, we all go to this. You know, we bring potluck food. We bring a bunch of beer and soda pop. And we watch anime for about 5 hours.
Huh.
Hey, that's a really good thing you got going there. I think it's maybe a luxury of living in such a densely populated area as Boston.
Yeah, it's something that is probably only going to happen in a large city. Like I said, I don't know, man. If you want to make it happen in your city, maybe this meetup site is the way to go, because it's worked for us.
I gotta ask, did any of them know who you were?
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right.
We have a celebrity.
No, it wasn't a matter of we have a celebrity. It's a matter of, hey, I've seen your stuff. And no one wanted to start a fight, so I took that as a positive.
Oh, there you go. Or ask for your autograph.
Yeah, that would have been awkward.
Or say, my wife wants to sleep with you.
That would have been awkward.
Pics, please.
A little awkward, yeah. All right. Also from XP Saint, what sort of recurring genre franchise and or tropes piss you off the most?
Premium
girl. Oh, boy.
Mike?
The premium girl. The girl that was so obviously designed to sell little plastic figures and launch 1,000 erotic doujinshi. I mean, it's one of those things that there are some shows where I'll watch and try to enjoy, but they're so obviously designed to, towards this that it just takes me out of the story completely. And yeah, Spice and Wolf has that going to a certain extent, I guess. Though I don't know, for me the story is strong enough in that one that I can kind of ignore it.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think the writing on Spice and Wolf it transcends the premium girl thing. Obviously, the show exists to sell holo merchandise, but the writing is sort of sneakily a little bit better. They're well written characters for the most part. And they're not like great written characters or anything, but they're more interesting than usual. You know, Daryl.
I think it's just generally like a defiant lack of any sort of attempt to differentiate your thing from the next. Like, I don't need to ever see another episode where the premise of the episode is everybody goes to the beach and you get to see the cast in swimsuits. That's the whole thing. It's not even like a vehicle. Like, at least in Urusei Yatsura, when they went to the beach, they discover some sort of weird, you know, demon that would cause some sort of horrible problem. It wasn't just the premise of we're going to the beach to check out everybody, or, you know,
let's have a slow pan. The bathhouse. Let's have a slow pan while they play the watermelon game.
Yeah. Yeah, beach, hot springs. Yeah, those episodes. Do without those. Justin, anything specific?
Yeah, mine is similar to Daryl's, but something much more specific. The anime death scene cliche.
Which is?
And this is especially bad in shonen and sci-fi shows, where literally the death scene is so played out that you can recite it line by line, and it will match about half of them. I've even seen this in video games, where literally the line is, shout character's name, Meo Samashite, open your eyes, Shinjao Dame, don't die, and then loud, long utterance of character's name.
Justin, I think we have Getter Robo to thank for that, actually.
Oh, God.
Musashi!
Yeah, exactly. People from that generation will always remember that frickin' show because of the way it ended.
But Musashi is like Kenny from South Park, because he keeps coming back to keep getting killed in increasingly elaborate ways.
Regardless.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. It's in one show, but no, it's in at least 30. To the point where it was sort of parodied in Gekiganger.
Oh, it was absolutely the Joe. That was straight
well,
up.
Well, the last line, absolutely. The last line, absolutely. Yeah. But they could have taken it further, because that's actually a paragraph of text that's copy pasted into about 30 shows.
Yeah, I can think about it. I'm thinking about that now. I'm like, I can think of a couple examples just off the top of my head.
To the point where I have this great memory when I was in high school. I was sitting there watching Robin play some new JRPG. I think it was Star Ocean. And literally that text in English translation floated by, and we started simultaneously quoting it in Japanese. Robin doesn't even know Japanese.
And the thing of it is, you know, the character who is getting killed is always, you know, well enough that they can, you know, utter some kind of reassuring words. It's never like they come upon the character who has just bravely sacrificed himself and his head is caved in.
Right.
Daijoubusa.
Mine has got to be the milquetoast hero who overreacts to any female sexuality whatsoever, and that's supposed to be funny, and we're supposed to think that that's funny. That is, if that's in a show, I will shut it off. I'm so tired of that shit. It is not funny when he falls into boobs and it drives me up the wall. And it's not for any like weird sort of, you know, anti-misandry crusade or whatever. It's just such a tired fucking character type, and they
yeah that's
still
up there with
it.
Eating a lot as far as anime site
exactly
gags.
Eating a lot's the other thing, like that's not a fucking personality, and it's not funny, and it's not clever, and it
are you saying I have no personality?
but Zach, his flailing arm grabs her towel, don't you understand?
Hilarious. And never
or he oversleeps
old.
And his little sister nags him to wake up.
God damn it.
Isn't that your dream, Zach, of having a little sister who'll nag you to wake up in an endearing way?
Once again, we're going to a very dark place here.
That just gets me to thinking. It would be kind of cool if some anime comedy would actually take crap like that and try to deconstruct it. Like, you know, the guy
think
falls
people's...
in... The guy
you want
falls
to talk about
boobs.
People overanalyzing the word fan. Deconstruct. Let's not even go there.
How do you even deconstruct that? There's nothing there.
Well, just the idea of the character falls into boobs, and then you can be like, okay, wait, how the hell does that even work? And try to hash that out on screen. I don't know.
Well, way to go, Mike.
I brought the conversation to a screeching halt. Awesome.
There you go.
Zach, you'd better move on.
All right, Kid Tick.
Yeah.
Kid Tick asks, Kid Tick has like a four-parter here. Do you find that G1 anime fans, pre-1995, I'm not aware
G1 of
this.
Anime fans.
I am not familiar
right
with this terminology.
Yeah, I know. I'm already not listening to
this. This is new to me. Let's just play along here. All right, less open to new trends in the medium as opposed to G2 fans 2004 and up. Personally, I think G1 fans can't accept new trends because they're fed a small piece of the medium by the industry, while G2 fans are more open to changes because of the internet. Will G1 fans ever come around and accept that times have changed and that the new stuff is actually good if they give it a chance, like Fullmetal Alchemist, Baccano, Haruhi, do-da-da-da, for example?
By his definition, I'm a G1 fan, and every single one of those shows, well, maybe with the exception of Haruhi, I'm a pretty big fan of Fullmetal Alchemist and Baccano and do-da-da-da.
Yeah. I would call myself a big fan of all of those, yeah, except for Haruhi, yeah.
I was going to say, I'm not a super fan of any of those except for Fullmetal Alchemist. Love that show. I mean, I think older fans, to a certain extent, are maybe I'm just comparing it to myself, just like maybe less accepting of mediocrity and very vocal in their criticisms. But at the same time, I mean, there's some rose-colored glasses shit going on there. I mean, try going back and watching a random episode of Macross. It can get hard to watch as well.
Yeah, I think we've all met the odd old timer that's still stuck in 1995. But if you're still an anime fan and you have been into it for 10 years, yeah, your bullshit meter is going to be a lot more sensitive.
Well, I mean, honestly, like you say, like we've all met that guy who's still stuck in 1995. Even the guys that I would describe as being kind of stuck in 1995 have found something new to latch onto and recognize quality when they see it. You would stop being an anime fan when you stopped finding things to like.
A lot of those people move on to other things entirely. Like they don't even talk about anime. Period. Like looking at this guy's post, it appears that he's got a thing out for Colony Drop, which is what I think the true nature of this question is.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think that most everyone I know who really is of the mentality that anime all sucks now or whatever, those people just aren't watching anime, period. I mean, those are all people who I know who they happen to be nerds into other stuff. They just aren't watching anime.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of a lot of fans, even ones with very strong opinions, who are just dismissive of something like do-da-da-da. I mean, I would never write a show like that off. I'd write off shit like Chubra, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get more discerning as time goes on, but you don't stay a fan unless you're still consuming and you're still finding things that you like. So, I mean, legitimately finding someone who's like, I hate all anime produced after 1995, but I'm still really passionate and active in fandom, that's like a unicorn, a particularly grumpy unicorn that probably doesn't really exist. It's just not how people operate. Yeah. I don't know. Bob Usurp asks, do you think there's a chance Funimation or someone else will put out a dub or sub-only DVD of House of Five Leaves, Shiki, or Tatami Galaxy? I know Shiki's already, that's been announced. Or were these titles just too unpopular?
Yeah, those are Notamina titles, Tatami Galaxy, House of Five Leaves. Both are great shows, but again, yeah, that was not exactly commercially viable, I think. They're at least on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some potential in Tatami Galaxy, but I mean, that show would be difficult to pull off technically, just because of the way the dialogue is structured and how fast the characters talk.
Yeah.
I know that at least one of those is licensed and not yet announced, so I will shut up.
All right.
Well, then there's hope.
Have hope.
You realize now that
your time.
The forums thread is going to be, 200 yeah. people speculating on which one it is.
Good. We just had a lot of downtime. We need all the traffic we can get.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's see here. Bradley Meek asks, what fan-made things have impressed you over the last year?
Some fans in Japan just made a tribute to the Daikon 4 animation
with Hatsune Miku.
Characters. Yeah. Using a very simple, rudimentary 3D program. There's apparently a competition to do this every year, and this has blown everything else I've seen in that competition out of the water. It's cool.
Off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything. I mean, every year there's always at least one or two costumes I see where it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. Well,
the easy, obvious answer for me is the all the charity stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's been absolutely sensational.
I'm constantly blown away by the quality of the fan creations for Tiger and Bunny in particular. Like, the fan art for that seems to be, like, at a cut above what you typically see for fan art of given series. A lot of it is really clever stuff.
I've noticed that, too.
I've been really impressed by some of the Japanese parody animations on Nico Nico and YouTube. The ones that are actually new animation that I can't believe that someone actually went that far for.
Well, have any of you guys seen the anime Doctor Who?
It got taken down because I believe they hired him to do something official, like the actual Doctor Who people.
Well, it's rough around the edges, but I thought it was very nicely produced. I was very surprised. I wasn't expecting much from it at all, but some, you know, the mecha design and some of the sequences are just fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty and very innovative anyway. Hazukari asks for Mike, I'm trying to get my girlfriend into Gundam. Okay. So far I've tried showing her the original movies and Wing, which she hasn't responded to that greatly. Are there any other Gundam series movies you think would be better suited to show?
Maybe she
considering we know nothing about this lady.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's a big
thing.
Lady.
My first impulse is if you've shown her Wing and the original films, which are kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum, and she's not really responding to either, maybe she just does not like Gundam. My big question is, does your girlfriend like science fiction? You know, if the answer is yes, maybe you could try to revisit the Universal Century stuff, specifically the OVAs. Yeah, if the answer is no, dude, you got your work cut out for you, and maybe she just doesn't like Gundam.
Yeah, well, I got to figure, like, there must have been a catalyst for this. Like, he gauged her interests and decided, hey, she might like Gundam.
I mean,
or it could just be, hey, I like Gundam. It sure would be good to have a girlfriend who liked Gundam.
And now, so will you.
This is reminding me of a great Onion article I saw like 10 years ago that was, you know, local man, you know, insists girlfriends sit through Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Where it's just like a guy who was really into Apocalypse Now just like made his girlfriend who was trying to make it obvious to him that she just wasn't that interested in the movie watch the whole thing. And, you know, and he was just completely set on this idea that no, as soon as you see it and as soon as you understand it, you're totally going to love it. And no, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah.
I know in the official like Gundam like manga anthology thing that they have, I could be wrong about this, but I could swear there was one of the titles that was called The Girl Who Liked Gundam. Like, that was the premise of this story.
And that's unusual.
Right. It was like, whoa, the girl who liked Gundam itself as opposed to, you know, yeah. So I don't know. I've never read it. I don't even know if that's a real title. But I want to believe.
If she's not into Gundam Wing and not into the original movies, then you have two options. You have either MS Igloo or SD Gundam Force.
Yes, these are not the Romance of the Three Kingdoms SD Gundam, Mike, specifically.
No,
SD
that
Gundam.
One specifically.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yep, that's the way to do
why
it.
Why make it about squashed robots when you can make it about squashed robots reenacting Chinese literature?
Hey, you know what? If all else fails, you can show her my favorite, which is Gundam 0080.
Yes. That was actually a good one. I mean, that's a real answer as opposed to what Mike and I are saying. You know,
right.
And like I said, if she's showing interest in the franchise and she's into science fiction and animation, then yeah, the OVAs would be another route to take. But like I keep going back to, dude, maybe she's just not into it.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, she doesn't like that they look really old. I mean, think about how old Gundam Wing is. Go back and watch Gundam Wing. The animation is not as nice as you may remembered from your childhood.
No.
Listening to this podcast who are younger than Gundam Wing.
Yeah, the Gundam Wing, I mean, when it was popular, I thought it kind of looked like shit. The animation was never good on that show. It's not good.
You know. Gundam Unicorn is the new one, and that seems to me like I know a lot of the hardcore fans are like, oh, but it's just turned into regular Gundam. I fail to see that. I mean, I understand that a lot of it is reminiscent of the original, but it is production-wise, it's clearly the most accessible one right now.
Well, story-wise, it's not that accessible to newcomers. I've watched Gundam Unicorn with people who are unfamiliar with the franchise, and they struggle, you know, they really, you know, my friends who've watched it with me really want to get into it, but they don't know enough about the backstory. You have to spend the episode explaining things to them.
Yeah.
That's no way to watch it.
I don't know. Of the various and sundry women who have been kindly enough to take an interest in dating me, I have never pushed anime on him, and I think it's probably a byproduct of it being my job, and I just don't want to push it on him because then that means I got to watch it in my spare time, not when I'm working. But that this is the kind of thing where it boils down to their tastes, and are you being a good judge of their taste and what they might like and what they might not like? So who knows? I don't know. But anyway, we got to move on. Dusty Cram Cram asks, he says, I teach in Japan, and one of my students doesn't like Miyazaki because he has an unhealthy fascination with young girls. Thoughts?
Well, the whole Moe thing kind of did start with Miyazaki.
Yeah, that's kind of fair.
I mean, yeah, it's fair to say that Miyazaki has a certain fascination with young girls. I wouldn't say it's necessarily an unhealthy fascination. Compare Spirited Away to something like Welcome to the Space Show. Both of these are meant to be family films, but it's not the Miyazaki one that's obviously kind of more weird and prurient.
Really? I didn't see Welcome to the Space Show. Is it kind
of... It's not that great. It could have been a better movie. It definitely needed an editor.
It could have been a very good movie, yeah. It needed some significant editing, but it also had the whole thing of it fixated on like the 9-year-old girl who's the main character to kind of an odd extent. They were. It had some freaky, deaky camera angles going on.
That actually didn't even dawn on me when I saw it, but you know, now that you mention it, I'm sure it's there. The thing that I remember about Welcome to the Space Show is that they've got like the totally nondescript, you know, audience self-insert male lead character, but he's not the lead character. He's just in a real situation. A character like that would just kind of be there. And I thought that was an interesting take on it. But yeah, the film, it definitely I wanted it to be better than it was. But yeah, Miyazaki, to hate Miyazaki for that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, not all of his movies, like Princess Mononoke doesn't really have the same thing. Nausicaa is young, but she's not young the way, you know, Shita is young.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a completely baseless observation, but I think it's stretching things quite a bit.
I think that's one of the cases where we can assign... sort of a creepiness to something where it is very clear when you watch the films that there is nothing creepy going on here.
But people are still going to jump to conclusions.
But they will still jump to conclusions, and the way anime culture has sort of evolved over the last 10 years, I mean, it's hard not to... It's hard if you're putting it inside that prism, yeah, okay, all right, I can see where somebody would walk away from it going, yeah, what is with all the little girls? Like, enough with the little girls. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of an unfair assessment, and that's like saying, like, you know, Spielberg tends to have, you know, children in his films. He does, but no one would say, like, is he a pedophile? Like, that's you being weird, not him. That's not necessarily on him.
Yeah, it's an unfair assessment, but at the same time, I see why it's made.
Yeah. Ludono, one of Ludono's questions was, anime remakes like Enmakun and Glass Mask, is there a point to bringing back old shows, or should we just stick with new material?
Both of those shows are awesome, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's cheap and relatively easy to just recycle something that's already been popular for decades, so that's...
It's a safer
totally
bet,
valid
too.
Approach. Yeah, it's a safe bet. It's like Hollywood remakes. Most of them are going to be pretty good, even when they're pretty bad. They're still, they're at least going to make their money back. And, yeah, I mean, the other thing is, yeah, I've seen Glass Mask and Enmakun, and those are both really entertaining.
Yeah, it's really just that with budgets rising and, you know, things being riskier, you know, they want to be more risk-averse and minimize the chances that they make a bomb. I mean, I'm sure they were not expecting the Conan movie to do as badly as it did, given that that used to be a popular thing for many, many years, not just in film, but also in comics and books and the like. So it makes sense to say, okay, we can take a chance and make a new one of that. And same thing with anime. I mean, Enmakun, they've done multiple remakes of that, and each one of them is done pretty okay for itself. And so we can make a new show and see if it'll do well. And I've watched it, and every episode I see is pretty entertaining stuff. So, you know, I can understand why they do it. The idea of should they all just go away, it's based on the idea that if they weren't doing these remakes, they'd be doing something else, possibly an original idea, and I don't know if that's logically sound.
No, it's not. I mean, I am at the point, the only thing I care about is whether or not the show is good. I don't care if I've seen these ideas before. I don't care if I've seen these characters before. I just want the show to be good. And the odds that, you know, if they're remaking something from the 70s, the odds that I've seen the original are pretty low anyway. So I'm fine with that. Yeah, I mean, if they're making something good, who cares if it's a remake or not? You know, if it's enjoyable and entertaining and you get something out of it, great. Okay. This purity about original ideas just, it bugs me. All right. Jaron Imenich asks, what is the truly worst OVA you've ever seen?
The truly worst would be something that, like, is so bad I don't even want to remember it. Like, one of those, like, Zion, I wish you were here kind of things.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's my answer.
what leaps to my mind first is Domain of Murder. That's a little unfair just because story-wise...
I like that show.
It's not horrifying. That one, it's just...
The art is weird.
I look at it as, like, it's the least necessary OVA I've ever seen. It's an animation where I think, why did they animate this? It's like they did absolutely nothing with the medium of animation at all. It's just a story that they happened to animate. In terms of just poor quality, well, there's Garzy's Wing.
Oh, maybe I should have you on, and we're gonna do Garzy's Wing as our 100th episode of the Anime World Order podcast.
Yay!
I'm down. Hey, you just snuck a commercial in there. Good work.
That's what he does.
Garzy's Wing is like, you can watch that and be like, okay, I'm not going to forget that I saw Garzy's Wing.
It is really entertaining.
It is. It really
especially
is.
Dubbed.
Let's see. Another one that comes to mind is Panzer Dragoon.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. That's a rough.
Even in the field of video game, you know, anime based on video games, which is a pretty shaky field, that's incredibly bad. I'll always remember talking to Jan Scott Fraser. She worked on that when that was in production. And actually, her team of animators was brought in to try and fix it, and they failed. I mean, because when I saw it, I couldn't stop talking about how bad it looked. And she overheard me, and she was like, "Well, we tried to clean that up. Was it really that bad?" And I'm like, "It didn't help."
whatever you did, it didn't work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad OVA right there. I think my worst would have to be either the nonprofit. North Korean kidnapping show Megumi, which is just barely a show, or Bobby Stock, which is also barely a show.
Right. I was going to say Megumi. Didn't that get dubbed into English?
Yeah, in Japan. And it's, yeah. Oh, Megumi, where is our daughter?
Awesome.
Yeah, well, it's...
What about the diminishing returns of the Project Aiko OVAs?
Oh, man... Those versus battle OVAs are pretty rough.
Yeah, and I feel like they just got worse and worse as they went along, too.
Yeah, I didn't mind the canon ones, but once it veered off into the...
Gray side, blue side.
Yeah, those last two or three were just, yeah, that were interminable.
I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
And those were the ones that aired on the Sci-Fi Channel after the original. They picked those.
Yeah, I mean that's a good example of something I think back on, and I can't even really remember anything about them.
The only thing I can remember from it is one fight scene, and then there was a scene where they were traversing through multiple, you know, realities, and one of them was the real Project Aiko for half a second.
Yeah, this reminded me, and I have actually seen this, Handmaid Mai.
Ooh.
Oh my god, yeah, I saw it too, and that's another thing. I can't really remember anything about it beyond seeing some of the more fan servicey parts and thinking, wow, this is basically porn.
God. Yeah, I mean, I could lump it in, you know, that's truly bad, and, you know, if we're really going to go for that kind of thing, Amazing Nurse Nanako also comes to mind.
Well, at least they finished that one.
Yeah, right? They didn't bankrupt themselves because their stuff was so awful.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you think of, like, the bad OAVs, they're usually, like, it's such a bad thing that you can't look away from it. You know, it's like the gun dress sort of bad, you know, but
gun,
this
gun
is
dress
like...
was a theatrical film.
Oh, yeah, that's right. How could I forget that getting your ticket with a note saying, oh, we'll send you the finished copy. But yeah, I mean, the stuff like, you know, what Justin says, like MD Geist, that's like legendarily laughable. And so like the real truly bad is like, God, like there's nothing to even make fun of in this.
Yeah, like I said, you try to think about it and you can't even really remember anything.
Yeah.
Your brain just kind of seizes up like you just tried to launch a 8-bit Windows application.
Okay. All right. V-Guy. Time for me to try to piece together V-Guy's question.
How many consecutive Twitter posts was it?
I don't know.
I believe it was 14.
14.
And
that is not what Twitter is for.
Yeah. I mean,
send an email if your question is that long.
Yeah, V for Vendetta guy. Just try to remember, brevity is the soul of Chogokin.
God. Hey, you've been saving that one.
I've had that in my notes for months.
All right. He's talking about the column you wrote on the influence Evangelion's had on shows. There's a whole wave of Evangelion knockoffs through the early 2000s. Funny thing is, these days I encounter fans who saw various knockoffs first and then watch Eva and feel it's formulaic. Sort of like accusing Mobile Suit Gundam of being stereotypical by-the-numbers robot series. Have you encountered this with other series?
Sure. I mean, easy example is like all the people who saw whatever the various harem comedy is. And, you know, to go back to like the original stuff that sort of codified that, you know, your Urusei Yatsuras and Kimagure Orange Roads and even like Tenchi Muyos and such. It's like they haven't seen any of that stuff. If they were to go back and watch them, they'd be like, oh, the show's whatever. You know, that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to a lesser extent, not in terms of like story elements or innovations or whatever, but, you know, if you go back, if you've never seen Casablanca and you decide to sit down and watch it now and you've watched, you know, your fair share of movies, almost every single line in Casablanca has been overquoted or inserted somewhere cleverly somewhere else in the last 50 years of cinema. So the whole thing feels like, really? Like, this is the most overquoted thing in the entire world. Like, I'm not going to get anything out of this. And so when you have something like Evangelion, where it's been, you know, thematically overquoted and, you know, ripped off so many times, and you see the ripoffs first, yeah, of course, you know, context isn't there for you.
I don't think this might not happen that much in anime, just because there's so much genre shift over the years.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I feel like V for Vendetta guy was really kind of asking if a casual fan seeing something like Evangelion could really appreciate its referential material without context. And my answer to that is hell yeah. It just has to be well made. I mean, look at Project Aiko. I had no idea what the hell was going on with its references when I first saw it in 93, but I loved it.
And did you think it was a comedy or did you just think it was awesome?
I thought it was awesome, but it was so obviously a comedy.
It had funny moments to me, but I mean, like the parts that were, you know, references.
Yeah.
I didn't think of it as a comedy. I thought it was as an action with, you know, comic relief.
But now that
I know the references, it's a screwball comedy.
Yeah.
Okay. Land of Obscusion asks, Sentai plans to continue licensing older animes that aren't rescues, a la Ghost Sweeper Mikami TV. What all do you want to see licensed by them?
Like something that would... Oh, Urashimon.
That's like my holy grail of hoary old anime. That's something I believe has no commercial potential, will never get released. But hey, if they're up for it, I'll buy it.
I'll happily be one of the 8 people that buys Touch.
Ooh, Touch is a good one. All 150 episodes of it.
Just 101.
Oh, okay.
A mere
well, one. I mean, I'm more of a Touch movies kind of guy because, you know, it's like such a slow-paced show. It's great, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, you can get Mitsuru Odachi, you get your fix from that from Cross Game in about a third of the time or half of the time. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I mean, with the pie in the sky for me is Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I mean, it'll never happen. You know, I know you say never, but it'll never happen.
What
about you, Zach?
I got to say, I think if this happens, and I've heard rumors that it, you know, it might, but if Fushigi Yugi comes back out, I really want to host some kind of a drinking party at a convention with my old school anime friends where we just get trashed and watch Fushigi Yugi.
If they say their names back and forth to each other and that's the conversation, take a shot.
I don't know what it is about that show that I just have kind of like, oh man, I totally want to revisit Fushigi Yugi.
It's because that was a big show, like around the same time as Kenshin. Fushigi Yugi was a huge show.
It was, yeah. It's also really silly and bad.
But we got so excited every time a new volume.
We had never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it had that mix of romance and action and comedy, and yeah, and every time Tama Home does a flying kick and it's really just a pan shot, you take a drink.
that seems like it would be super fun to me. So Fujigi Yugi, put that
yeah,
shit
I think
back
the
now.
Real license to print money is once whomever it is can get it together and re-release Sailor Moon.
Yeah. I think that comes up in almost every episode of the show.
Yeah. I am going to the Sailor Moon midnight release party at Comicopia in Boston on September 12th. That should be interesting.
You gonna dress up?
No, I'm not going to dress up. I just think it's a good angle for a column. But yeah, they're actually having to cap attendance at 50. Apparently, there's been a lot of interest in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. I can get into this briefly. And Justin, you might have some insight on this. V-Guy wants to know what's going on with Gainax. Naysayers are complaining that their latest project bombed, but there are other people who like it. So I'm having trouble sorting out if it's the usual, quote-unquote, background hate-dom chatter for Gainax. Or is Gainax actually facing particular problems these days?
I have no insight at all.
What latest project of theirs supposedly bombed?
I don't know.
Let's analyze this. What was their latest project that wasn't one of the Evangelion movies that they did with Studio Kara?
I thought it was Panty and Stocking.
It was Panty and
Pop.
Yeah. I was going to say that wasn't exactly a bomb, was it?
No, their newest show is Dantalion.
Yeah, I was going to say that Dantalion's their new show, but it doesn't seem to be hitting the same way. Like, oh, this is Gainax. Like, it's just,
not only that, it's a work for hire. It's a Kadokawa show.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, I mean, I think of, like, the Gainax stuff that missed the mark, and I think of This Ugly and Beautiful World, and I was wondering if it was going to be something in the same box as that.
Wow, that was a terrible show.
Man, that was bad.
Yeah. And that wasn't a work for hire. That was Gainax all the way, baby.
Yep, and it was shit.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have any great insights into the company either. I've always just... people in Japan have always maintained that the company is run by people who really don't know how to run a business, and there's constant problems with paperwork and tax avoidance and drug use.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
They're their own worst enemy.
Oh, by the way, for the record, Gainax has absolutely nothing to do with the new Ava movies.
Yeah.
Is it really nothing at all? That's just Studio Kara?
Absolutely nothing at all. That's all Studio Kara.
Okay, so they print their names on the stuff and they collect a royalty. Well, good for them.
Steven Spielberg style, baby.
Yep.
Deck Doug asks, were there any Red Line Gambits before? Original, creative, very high budget movies that flopped in Japan even though it shouldn't have.
Odin!
Yeah, there's Odin in the 80s. I mean, Justin, I think you can talk about this one. What about Hulse Prince of the Sun?
Hulse Prince of the Sun, Wings of Oniamis. A huge percentage of anime that we love bombed in Japan.
Didn't Millennium Actress in most of Satoshi Kon's movies not do so great?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't huge bombs, but they weren't exactly profitable.
Yeah, if you want insight into the whole this movie bombed thing, listen to the commentary track on Castle of Cagliostro, where you can hear the Japanese producer, you know, kind of angrily vent about the fact that it's, you know, this is great that you guys like this movie now, but when we made it, it failed, and that ruined us.
Yeah, I mean, this happens constantly, and usually it's the best stuff.
Yeah, like, I mean, were it not for international, you know, reception, I think Ghost in the Shell would be another one.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell. I think even with international, Ghost in the Shell still didn't make back its money.
Yeah, I think that's part of why it's so hard for them. It takes so long between successive installments of it.
Justin, are you kidding me? Didn't that thing only cost like $3 or $4 million to make? That was like the number one video on the Tower Records chart for like 2 years.
Manga lost their shirt on it.
Manga only kicked in $1 million. Really?
Yeah, Manga did not turn a profit on that movie, and it almost bankrupted them.
Wow. Well, I mean, at the same time, I'm sure Manga did not turn a profit on that movie, but maybe Andy Frain did.
He lost me.
Oh, Andy Frain was the actual executive producer at Manga UK who kicked in $1 million to help finance it.
Yeah, I mean the logic of that, how he could make money on it and Manga doesn't. I don't see what you're getting.
That's entertainment, dude.
Oh, he pocketed some.
I think it's a possibility. I mean, I hear something like Ghost in the Shell was a flop and didn't really make any money. That just defies belief to me.
Right, someone clearly has made money on Ghost in the Shell. We just don't know who it was. You know, this is, goes back to the old thing where Universal claims that they still haven't made their money back on the original Back to the Future.
Yeah, for years and years.
Or Lord of the Rings didn't make money.
Yeah,
funny accounting.
Bullshit accounting that's for tax purposes, yeah.
Well, I'm sure at some point they made money, but short term it really, you know, was a nice, you know, punch in the gut to them.
Where does, like, Steam Boy fall into all this?
Steam Boy lost money.
Yeah, no way.
Steam Boy lost lots of money.
I'm as shocked as you are. Just say not at all.
Oh, Steam Boy. God, never want to sit through the thing again. Not that it's a bad movie, I cannot imagine. I saw it like 4 times when it came out due to work, and I think I still like just remember every single frame and think like this movie is an hour too long. Yeah.
Well, I liked it a lot the first time we saw it, Zach, when it was under questionable circumstances and unsubtitled.
Right.
Before we really knew what was going on, it looked amazing.
I remember that.
Once you get it into a theater, it's just like, oh boy, what is this? This. Yeah, it's an hour too long.
What was that, 2004?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Or 2003 or 2004.
It would have had to be, yeah. Maybe it was Anime Boston 2004, I think. All right. Okay, final question from Ludono. Nowadays, every anime is online within 24 hours of its airing. Are obscure shows even possible anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because
I feel like a lot of current TV anime is teetering on obscurity. I mean, what comes to mind for you, Daryl?
Well, there's a particular show that's all about serving tea in ancient Japan. And, you know, basically what I'm getting at is if a show doesn't get fan-subbed, then no one's heard of it.
Yeah.
If a show doesn't get, like, you know, and when I say fan-subbed or, you know, also, like, part of the official streaming, then it may as well not exist. There are plenty of shows, you know, when I say plenty, I mean, you know, a decent handful that come out, and if there's no English language adaptation of it, we don't know anything about it. You think some of the biggest shows in Japan, stuff like the Chibi Maruko Chans and Sazai Sens, we don't know anything about that. To say you watch that here, that's obscure, even though that's the number one anime.
Anything with sports, that gets obscure.
You can go really deep. You can go all the way back to like Star of the Giants, Apache Baseball Team. That's pretty obscure stuff. I mean,
yeah, even though it was a huge hit in Japan.
The thing is, here's something that jumps out at me. We all know about Tenchi Muyo. There was a Tenchi Muyo spinoff last year. What can you guys tell me about it?
Nothing, because I never really cared about Tenchi in the first place.
Nothing, because I see Tenchi Muyo and then I immediately shut down and go to bed.
Have any of you even seen it? Do you even know the title of it?
No, I do not.
Didn't know it existed.
Yeah. It was, I think it was an OVA or a short TV series called Isekai no Sekishi Monogatari. Translated like Legend of the Holy Weapon or something like that. But yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. No, now I know what you're talking about, but no, didn't even think about it.
Yeah, and that's something. So it was a spinoff of a once very popular franchise, and yeah, I don't. That was online. That was fan subbed at some point, but I don't think that really has a following. I don't think you could really find out that much about it anymore. And just go back 10 years. I mean, what? How much have you guys seen Six Angels?
Yes.
I shouldn't have asked.
Oh, I have indeed seen Six Angels.
Okay, how about Comet-san?
I've seen Comet-san. That show it's a good, you know, solid magical girl show, but again, it's that old, was it Ishinomori art style?
No, I don't think that one was Ishinomori in particular, but yeah, it was definitely retro.
Well, I just want to point out that this method here is quite flawed because you're in the wrong room of people to say that if we've heard of it, that means it's not obscure.
I'm hoping to do it for the benefit of the audience at home.
Right, yeah. No, I get it.
Who I kind of expect are going to hear things like Six Angels and Comet-san and be like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Right. I for one, you know, was really big on like Soten Koro, which was, you know, another Three Kingdoms type show. A lot of those don't even get touched at this point because they're just so freaking hard to translate. But yeah, that was a cool show. Didn't really get fan subtitled. Maybe it got like done halfway or so. But if no one picks it up that way, then it just doesn't exist. It's very easy to get shows now more than ever with the way the internet is. But because things are so easy, once you have to expend the slightest bit of effort, people don't bother. If it's not a Google search away, it may as well not even be there.
Well, then
really mediocre shows, they disappear immediately.
and anything that's not getting the fan sub or significant e-penis points. Gogol 13, I know, is one that just they stopped fan subbing it, right, Daryl?
Yeah, you know, they stopped about halfway through the Section 23 release. They say they're going to release the rest of it, and I'll be getting it. But again, if people don't fan sub something, or if people don't stream something, or whatever, if there's no DVD release and it comes out, then it isn't there. So I mean, there's plenty of like I'm sure there's Gona Guy, you know, related stuff. Things like the new Kotetsujin Jig. When I say new, I mean as of a couple years
2007,
ago.
2007. Yeah.
Yeah. It did get fan subbed eventually, but you know, it's completely obscure and under the radar to people because it's a robot show and it's a remake of this old stuff. But it's not like it's hard to find, or not. It's no harder to find than anything else, I should say.
Well, yeah, but there's plenty of stuff that is hard to find. I mean, what about Skyers 5? What about Meteor Mask, man?
Meteor Mask. Jeez. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, the answer, I mean, his overall question is it possible for there to be current obscure shows? And the answer is, of course,
absolutely.
Yes, of course there is. That is absolutely possible. I mean, if you're talking about this stuff in the macro sense, everything is obscure. Tiger and Bunny is very obscure. You know, did someone walking down the street? It's all obscure. There is no super mainstream anime hit right now.
Yeah, I mean, Tiger and Bunny.
But even among anime fans, very few people even knew about, say, Rainbow. And how recent was that? That's not that old a show.
Mm. That was 2009, yeah. Yeah, that wasn't long ago at all. But yeah. I think that was 2010, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unless it's like a major hit and everyone on the internet's talking about it, it's generally fairly obscure within fandom. You know, there's, you know, a handful of shows fandom really latches onto and gets excited about. And if you're an anime fan, then you generally will know about those. But, you know, unless you're writing for our preview guide and are getting paid to literally watch everything that comes out that's available, you know, most people don't do that. So, you know, it's off your radar unless you hear people talking about it. And people generally only talk about a couple, you know, a handful of shows every year. So the answer is yes. All right, guys. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming on. Always fun to have you guys on the show.
Anytime.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Mike and Daryl for coming on. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. As always, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a little review or a rating. We really appreciate it. And hey, see you all next week.